If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
That we're all embodiments of. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Confronting, Conquering, and Transcending Life's Travails, Fears, Issues, and Uncertainties, like a master. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath and call forward that ancient master that is the soul, the embodied individual self that has always been and always shall be. It's that part that's birthless, deathless, all-knowing, all-powerful, and ever-pervasive bliss. That may seem difficult at times to realize, because the experiences we have on this earth are so absorbing and riveting. We tend to forget that above and beyond all of the drama, we sit like a golden Buddha watching the whole show. So let's align our spiritual consciousness by chanting Hu, an ancient, ancient Sanskrit name for that which is beyond all names and all forms, but it's a close approximation. So take a deep breath. You. I guarantee that if you have any problems or issues, worries, fears, or concerns, if you simply sit down and chant Hu for as long as it feels like you're supposed to be doing that, when you get up, you'll notice that whatever was bothering you has somehow simply dissolved. That's the simplest key that we could possibly give you. So simple. So what we are doing here is purifying and aligning our human personal self with our transpersonal immortal self. Why? That we may serve the greater divine plan as co-creative cosmic co-workers. And Earth is our training arena. Problems and difficulties in life cannot be avoided. They are part of the reason we're here on Earth. They're part of life here in the realms, which would include Earth, that are under the laws of duality and polarity. So part of our training for mastery is in how we handle these issues. And that's really our only option, how we handle them. And it's in how we handle the things that come up in our life that are problematic that reveals our level of integrated awareness, how much of that vaster immortal self has gotten down into our human mind, human emotions, human behavior, or not. So the degree of that reveals our level of integrated awareness and even our level of spiritual attainment. Because the ego, the false self, always has issues, usually with everyone and everything. The false self survives and thrives on issues and problems. And it knows it will dissolve the moment you transcend the charge that issues have on you in your life. It's not so much that you destroy the ego, it's that it dissolves as a fictitious imagination, an imaginary form that simply dissolves in the light of higher awareness. That's where that the power of your observation can absolutely spell the difference between mastering a situation and feeling like you've been hit with a sledgehammer and you're smashed in the situation, so to speak. So today, earlier, I was reviewing my extremely adventuresome and eventful life. And I was reflecting upon how I had faced and handled my greatest fears and heartbreaks. And it became obvious as I reviewed these, at the time, quite disturbing incidents, that these had also been my greatest tests and times of spiritual overcoming. In fact, in retrospect, my most difficult moments I see now were really my greatest moments because they assisted in developing selfless compassion. The ego is so self-focused, it really doesn't care about anyone or anything but its own self-pleasure. It really is a very selfish part that we all have. So it's these blows in life that call forward the selfless quality of our immortal true self, our authentic self, which is the nature of compassion itself. And you can't develop it without these tests, these blows that fate seems to deal us. So, we might suggest, if you choose, that you might also benefit by examining the most trying times in your life and how you chose to confront them. For example, consider those times when you had to face a serious challenge or do something you greatly feared. Perhaps it was the loss of someone or something to which you were greatly attached. Oh, attachment is one of the most powerful forces that bind us to the wheel of rebirth and karma. Or perhaps your situation was having to go forth into an unknown area fraught with uncertainty. Perhaps all of the above. Perhaps, like me, you've been through all of that. Have you ever been so afraid that you trembled all over and were completely unable to move or speak? Have you ever felt like you were in a void without any visible way out? So entrapped in a situation or state of mind that you simply felt hopeless to escape. Have you experienced a heartbreak or a series of heartbreaks as I have? So profound, all you could do was breathe and watch. Stunned to silence by the wrenching anguish you felt. Have you ever been in a life-altering situation, like a verdict, a court sentence, or a diagnosis? Try to recall how you handled the incident. What did you learn about yourself as a result? Perhaps you can see now that these travails that so impact our lives can be on many levels. They can be emotional, mental, physical, psychological, and even metaphysical. So as you journal, if you're guided to do so, see if you can look quite objectively at the event as if it were happening to another person. Doing that itself is a profound meditation. But ask yourself, what area was the most impacted by the situation? Which part of you experienced the pain, the worry, the fear, whatever it was? This is deep meditation. And it's one that will yield great clarity of perspective and freedom. And it will add immeasurably to your self-confidence and empowerment if you've gone deeply into it. Why? Because you are here. No matter what happened, you are here now, listening to this seminar. That means you conquered and transcended the situation. And you're now eager to go beyond it, to whatever's next. You are eager to progress spiritually and to master your life's curriculum. You are intent upon fulfilling your highest divine destiny. Now, after you've listed some of your moments of greatest fear, loss, worry, uncertainty, whatever, now note how you handled each situation, what exactly you did at the time, and how conscious were you in the situation? Did you react, or did you exercise conscious choice? Now, this exercise will reveal so much to you about your strength as a soul, about your innate wisdom, and so much more. You'll be absolutely amazed. As the Course in Miracles teaches, every situation is a lesson God would have us learn. You see, most people live completely unaware of the value of their daily experiences. Most are simply going about as if some future goal or attainment was the purpose of their life. And, you know, like that, they're really not present in their life at all. They're caught up in some mental idea they're pursuing, but not living the life that's present here and now. And an unexamined life is really an unconscious life. So we're speaking to those of you who are serious about fully awakening and self-actualizing your fullest potential. We keep refocusing your attention upon who and what you are above and beyond your human conditioning and limiting beliefs. As an individualized soul, an extension of the one divine source, you have unlimited potential, unlimited power, unlimited spiritual resources. But it's in meeting life's challenges that these untapped abilities are externalized. You've got to have these confrontational things arise in your life to call forward something you haven't used before. For example, all the memories of all your previous attainments, everything you've ever been since you extended as a conscious, individualized soul, are stored in your sacred chalice. That is the true Holy Grail. It contains what was wrought in your countless embodiments in time-space, where the hero arose in you and did the divine expression, where you went beyond the human limitations. It's stored in your chalice, but it takes something startling and unusual to serve to trigger your latent knowing. You know, when you're really, really scared, you notice when someone's really afraid, all of their senses are highly awake and aware. The pupils dilate, the eyes bulge out because you're trying to get as much vision as you can. Everything is alert and attentive. And anything can happen. What you do in that moment decides what happens. What you do in that moment decides the reality that's going to coalesce around you. Now we're talking about the shamanic path, aren't we? Where we can literally change the outcome by a dramatic shift in how we handle a situation. I remember my sister-in-law was on a train, somewhere, I think, back east. And a man came up behind her with an overcoat and pushed a knife in her ribs and whispered, "If you say anything, I'll kill you right here." And she turned around in complete centered awareness and said, "But the Christ in me loves and recognizes the Christ in you." At which point the man dropped his knife and fled. So that was a startling and unusual action by a very enlightened woman that completely changed the outcome of what could have gone down there. But that was what was given her to say at that moment in that situation. So realizations previously unsummoned but latent within you but await their time to be brought forward. You see, the karmas, the actions have to align so that you can go through a really significant event, a really significant test. So everything has to be just right. You can't force these things. They come in their own timing. But when they come forward, don't waste the opportunity. So accidents, shocks, facing your greatest fears can shift your assemblage point. What's that? Your assemblage point is the ordinary place that you operate from. It's your customary state of consciousness. When that assemblage point shifts, as it does when you have a sudden shock, it can send you into an entirely new reality. Sometimes these are taken to be a walk-in experience. The shift is so dramatic. And sometimes they are that, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're simply the shifting of the assemblage point. Sometimes to where it doesn't go back to the former place. So adversity forces one to draw upon previously untapped inner resources, strength, knowledge, abilities that can appear miraculous in their unfoldment. You can do just extraordinary things when you're in that zone. So these consciousness-altering events are all tests of initiation. What's an initiation? An initiation is where you have entered a more expanded state of awareness, and you don't go back to the previous state. If you go back, that wasn't an initiation. That was an experience. Initiation is permanently transformative. So you as a soul initiate these events yourself. When you as a soul know it's time to go beyond where you've been in your life spiritually. And it's all always spiritual, regardless of the specifics. You as soul set up everything that shows up in your life. Believe it or not, there simply are no errors in this. You are never a victim of the world you see, for you alone have invented the world you see. That is one of the most powerful lessons Jesus gave in A Course in Miracles. You are never a victim of the world you see, for you alone have invented the world you see. So the events you experience evolve out of assumptions, expectations, and interpretations you've made about life. So to change your outer, the inner must shift its perspective, that's all. So any changes made in how you react, how you think, and how you respond will result in corresponding outer representations. Now, how are some of the ways that we deal with life's trials, challenging situations, and so forth? Well, the most primal is fight or flight. If we choose flight, we'll most often try to get away from the situation. We'll try to flee if possible, or escape some way, by some means, to avoid or deny what's happening. Or we'll find a way to numb out and tune out. And here's where addictive patterns creep in. Alcohol, drugs, food, sex, shopping, media absorption, anything that can block and numb out what is happening right now. And that would be your flight. Or another approach is fight. Here's where one's aggressive nature comes out in an attempt to hide one's fear. People who are the most aggressive are the ones that are the most fearful. Then, in this kind of state, one rages and shouts and verbally or physically attacks, threatens, intimidates, bullies, or bludgeons one's adversary. Or one uses self-attack. That's why people do the cutting. Or manifesting a disease in the body. Or practicing risky behavior. Even suicide can be a way to attack oneself and to escape from one's problems. And then there's the intellectual approach. That's where, using the rational mind and one's cleverness, is utilized to defend or argue one's position, or to rationalize, to justify oneself. And often this is simply a cover for pride and one of the many mind power games that the ego plays. The next level would be the witnessing self. Here, one observes from the balcony of soul awareness, impersonal, neutral, noticing without judgment, observing without personally identifying with it. And that's what we're working with here to attain that state. And then, of course, the highest is divine consciousness, where one sees only the one. One's own divine self is enjoying all these roles. And that divine self is abiding in changeless bliss and peace. Which, by the way, is not static. It's abiding in that state of bliss that creates the cosmos. Yes. Creation, on a divine level, is a manifestation of bliss. So, one of the many ways you can readily see your spiritual progression is noticing how differently you respond today to the situations that would really upset you in the past. You'll notice, for example, that the same situation today may not produce any reaction at all. There is just a deep inner stillness replacing former mental turmoil. I experienced that today. I was surprised. Situation came up that normally would make me absolutely wacko with distress and despair and sadness and desire to control. But instead, there was no reaction at all. I was absolutely shocked. So the situation hadn't come to me where I had the opportunity to witness my progression over these past 9 years. So when you keep doing your spiritual practice faithfully and just know that it's producing fruit, even though you don't see it perhaps immediately, you'll come to an experience like I did today where it's like, oh my gosh, I don't have any more energy on that issue. I don't have that attachment anymore. Wow. So that's one of those happy things that you'll discover as you continue on with your spiritual practice. Now, perhaps there's someone you used to dislike, maybe even hate. But today you feel only a tender compassion for that person. I've had several situations like that in my life. One not too long ago. And there's nothing inside me now but compassion and really love. Really a sincere love for that person. So what I'm saying is that you're going to notice an inner strength, a composure, a greater patience and tolerance in every area of your life. Your self-confidence, your self-trust, your self-respect become so solid and unshakable. You sense an inner core of strength that you know will carry you through anything. And I might add here, it's not a belief in yourself as a personal egoic self, but you have tapped the Christ presence within you, the power of the divine spirit within you, the power of the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. You've tapped that. And you know that which is within you is greater than anything in this world, or in the worlds beyond this world, or the interdimensional worlds that we also travel in as a spirit. So you become your own best friend and favorite company, not in an egotistic sense, but because you know who dwells within you as you. That divine Atma, that holy presence, has fully occupied your life. And so then you enjoy every day like a child, taking life as it comes and playing with whatever shows up. That's the divine Leela. All of your senses are keen, unguarded, open, savoring the deliciousness of life. Oh, then you're really alive. You're really participating in life. everything that you experience, it's like so beautiful. The sounds of the birds, it just sends you into ecstasy. Looking at the beautiful sky and the clouds and the deep, deep, deep blue. Or the gray smog, whatever, it doesn't matter. You will see the beauty everywhere you look. You can go to the most degraded place in town and see beauty. And there's no desire to be anywhere else but where you are here and now. You absolutely know that you're exactly where you're meant to be, doing exactly what you're meant to do. And beloved, that is peace. Sai Baba says there's no happiness greater than contentment. We're not talking about passive apathy or tolerance or anything like that. We're talking about where you know that you know you're exactly where you're supposed to be, doing exactly what you were meant to do. And you're here now, fully participating in your life. So let me say right now, whatever the situation, issue, or event is, if it does not give rise to greater freedom and bliss, it is simply not real. It's not true. It's a relative, temporary experience, but it's not reality. It's not that greater reality I'm speaking of. In other words, it's arising out of the false self, the ego mind. It's a conjuration. And it must be vanquished and transcended by your soulific light, your awareness. Soul, God, awareness, authentic self are one and the same. Holy Spirit. They're all the same. So only you can put your demons to flight. Only you can slay your dragons, because only you manifested them. Now, at some point in every life, everyone must confront the dweller on the threshold. The dweller on the threshold is the sum total of one's personal shadow self, the personification of one's false self. In Christianity, this is called the devil or Satan. But actually, it's the sum total of one's personal shadow self, and what is called the devil or the call power is actually the personification of our collective human shadow self. And yeah, it does take form. It takes forms in those things in our mind that torment us, that make us do evil behaviors. So that's the personification, temporary. It's like a conjuration. It's a false form. But you do have to confront it. You do have to see through it. You do have to dissolve it in higher awareness. Remember the scene in the movie Siddhartha, where Prince Siddhartha was sitting under the Bodhi tree just prior to attaining full enlightenment and becoming the Buddha. He was sitting there in meditation, and Mara, which is the Buddhist terminology for the devil, or his dweller on the threshold, his embodied false self, appeared before him coming out of a pool of water before which he was sitting. It had his face, but it was distorted and ugly. And along with Mara came the enchantresses, the celestial damsels that were the embodied qualities of lust that were trying to disrupt his mind and distract him from meditation because he was just getting ready to enter full enlightenment. Excuse me. So at some point, we all have to go through that. I went through that oh gosh, back in the early 70s. And I attacked my false self. I tried to kill it. I hated it. And then I realized, oh my gosh, that contains all that I came to Earth to experience. And so there, within a dream, actually, I had this experience. Now that I think back, I don't remember if it was in meditation or if I was asleep. I think I was asleep, but I don't remember clearly now, because it was kind of the same kind of thing, asleep or dreaming, the same awake or dreaming. So as soon as I recognized the value that this false self had for me, I immediately shifted and I said, oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for what you've shown me. Thank you for what you've taught me. I came from the divine realms. Those realms I know. What I don't know is about the shadow, the not-self. It was you that taught me the difference. And then, of course, with that, there was the healing as I watched the transformation of this misshapen and rather awful-looking being. She became quite beautiful and dissolved in my love. So these are the tests that we go through. Every one of us goes through variations on this theme. And then you have tests. There are the tests of the five elements. These are really odd. Earth, wind, fire, water, and ether that are undergone at some point, for we also must master the elemental forces. Now, these involve climatic events, involving weather and other earthly phenomena, and they're part of your testing and initiations as you go into more expanded states of awareness and understanding. For example, Earth initiation may involve you going through experiences of earthquakes, sinkholes, and mudslides, things of that nature. Or survival scenarios where you're out in the wilderness and you have to find some way to survive. Then you have the tests by wind, which could be tornadoes, hurricanes, typhoons, things of that nature. And then there's the tests of fires, all kinds of fire. Also volcanic eruptions and tests of heat. How do you hold up when you're in 114 degrees with humidity to match? Or you have to cross a desert? Or your air conditioning goes out and you have to find a way to transcend heat or die? There was a man and woman that were stranded in one of the mountain ranges in the snow. And they survived. Well beyond. Gosh, they were out there so long that it was considered a miracle that they were found. And when they were found, they were perfectly healthy. Why? Because they imagined very strongly in their minds that they were in their beds covered with warm blankets. They sat down each day and visualized eating, you know, hot meals, and drinking delicious hot beverages. And it was all done in the mind. But obviously, they had very well-trained minds because it represented in their bodies not being affected by the element at all. They didn't have frostbite. They were not emaciated. They were not dehydrated. And they didn't starve to death. And that's an example of a man and a woman who went through a severe test of mastery, and they mastered the elements in that situation, and their minds, I might say. So then you have the test by water. That would have been an example that I just gave you, of floods or snow or potential drowning incidents or shipwrecks or even mastering a skill like surfing or deep sea diving is indicative of mastering the water element. And then you have the tests of ether. The etheric realm is the energy field that surrounds all things, like the divine blueprint. And with the etheric realm, you have to test with the unseen forces, the unknown, the void type of experiences, the subconscious, the conflicts, and the inner plane encounters with various ethereal life forms. All of these are part of the tests of the etheric realm. Many shamanic initiations have to do with mastering the etheric forces of nature within and consequently without, because you have to always master within before you master them without. I had my very first test when I was 6 weeks old, and the fire broke out in our house. And I was the one that cried and notified everyone, so they were able to get us all out safely. But I realized years later that, oh my gosh, that was a test by fire. Because obviously, even though the body was only 6 weeks old, it had enough presence that it knew the danger and could forewarn everyone. So, the master, the soul, has to master the physical body and each one of its subtle bodies, which involves the tests of the five elements. For example, the physical body is made of the material elementals, the earth elementals. The astral body is made up of the water elementals. The causal body is made up of the fire elementals. The mental body is made up of the air elementals. The pranic energy body is made up of the etheric elementals. The soul represents the part that is transcendental, the impersonal, transpersonal, witnessing presence that ensouls or gives life and vitality and animation through the physical, astral, causal, mental, and etheric bodies. So you are that soul, that witnessing presence, preparing each of your subtle bodies for your full occupation and utilization as a divine co-worker and co-creator. You've got to get all of your ducks lined up. They've got to march to the tune of the soul. They have to live attuned and receptive to the impulses arising from the soul level, so that the soul can look through the mind. The soul can operate through the emotions, through the subtle bodies. Every one of them has to be brought to serve the purpose of the soul. When that happens, you have genuine empowerment. You have the ability to truly create as one with God. So our instrument in this confronting and overcoming is our mind, correctly used to discriminate, discern, and determine our actions. A bad mind notices the evil. That's the result of being conditioned by constantly taking in bad food. Bad food includes not only what you put in your mouth, but what you put in your eyes, in your ears, what you touch, what you interact with affects the mind. That's why purity is very important when you're on a spiritual path. Having a wholesome environment and putting only good things into your mind so that it begins to purify and become clear and peaceful and still, so the soul can then look through the mind, think through the mind, operate and direct your life through the mind, the higher aspect of the mind, not the ego. So a discerning mind selects preferences. An awakening mind becomes more and more aware. A fully illumined mind has dissolved into the sea of loving mercy and is pure bliss. So the divine mind, or rather the state where there is no mind, for it has merged into the supreme Atma, sees only the divine within and without, because all sense of otherness has simply dissolved in that higher awareness. So it is a process of gradually purifying the mind. For it is the mind alone that covers the Atma, the spirit, which is one's inherent purity and divinity, much like a dark shroud, or like a dark cloud that obscures the sun. So it is to purify the mind that we meditate, contemplate, journal, study, visit great souls, have satsang with other awakening beings, and that we serve. The nature of the soul is to serve. All of these help in purifying the mind and overcoming our innate selfishness when we're self-focused in the ego. Now, the detergent that cleans the mind is the repetition of the divine sound current, represented by the vibrational tones of the names of the Lord. Every name of God is a very high vibrational mantra. When it's repeated with steadfast devotion, dedication, when you take your time to do your spiritual exercises every day with faith and devotion, your mind is purified and takes on the form of that one which you have chosen as your beloved. And it takes on the vibration of that name that you repeat with devotion. So the powerful vibration and the divine names create that higher vibration within the mind. And that begins to replace the lower egoic vibrations. The vibration of the holy names of God will purify and transmute all of those dark clouds of negativity and dissolve mountains of karmic conditioning and false identification. It just dissolves it. And then you come to the state that Buddhists refer to as that clear sky mind, the Sambodhikaya, the place of all wisdom, the land of all wisdom, the pure land, the God realms. But it's experienced as a sense of great inner clarity and spaciousness. It's spacious because it doesn't have mental thought clutter. The mind is at peace. There's no agitation. It's like a clear lake without any ripples. There's nothing that needs to be thought about or processed or worried about. Instead, your automatic go-to is the mantra, which begins to chant you. You wake up in the night and it's the mantra chanting. You find that the mantra is there in the background all the time. And the mind is at peace, it's still. So all people are essentially divine, and therefore good. It's only the state of mind that delineates differences. And it's only an evil mind, that is to say, an impure mind, that causes evil behavior. That's why when you look at what's going on in the world, the terrorist activities and all these things, that is the result of an impure mind, a mind that has been indoctrinated with false teachings. It's been indoctrinated. It's been, what is the term? Brainwashed into hating. And so underneath that black bank, let's say fog bank, of negative thought forms is a pure and innocent and holy soul. There is a Christ awaiting to be awakened. So evil always self-destructs. It may look like it's succeeding for a while, but because it has no inherent life principle behind it, it isn't principled, which means it isn't an eternal verity, it's doomed to self-destruct. So it's only a matter of time, literally a matter of time, before it destroys itself. What gets destroyed? The negativity. Nothing can touch the soul. Nothing can touch the immortal self. But the mind is responsible for the behavior. That's why it's so important to guard your mind. Only you can decide where you focus your attention. Only you can decide what you put into your mind. The world, the violence, the unrest in the world reside nowhere else but within the egoic mind, which is the separated sense of self. So the mind is made up of the conclusions we've drawn and the interpretations we've made throughout our countless incarnations. The mind consists of desires for sensory pleasures. Within the mind are the attachments to our personal identity, to our physical body, to our family, to our friends, to our belongings. It consists of our opinions, our beliefs, our assumptions, even our fluctuating points of view. It contains our comparisons, our discontents, our dissatisfaction, as well as our passions, ambitions, and pursuits. There are six deadly enemies of peace. The six most deadly enemies of our peace reside in the mind also. They are lust, anger, greed, delusion, pride, and attachment. And these assume even more subtle guises as one progresses on the spiritual path. So as long as we are in a body, we have to stay on guard. Dissolving the mind in the light of awareness will end all sorrow, all suffering, and all violence and fear. So the mind is responsible for both our bondage and our liberation, depending on how we use it. Therefore, the mind could be regarded as our most valuable tool in our spiritual toolkit, as well as our most dreadful and dreaded enemy. A good mind is a great blessing. It's a great asset. And an evil mind is our worst enemy. So it's up to us to discipline the mind, to bring the mind to serve the purpose of the soul, to slip past the mind, to transcend the level of one's thoughts. The mind must be made to concentrate its attention on some fixed object. This is the purpose, a mantra, or an image one focuses upon during meditation becomes very important. This gives the mind something to do while you, the soul, go beyond the known into the unknown inner realms of consciousness and awaken therein. So anything can serve as the point of focus. In fact, whatever fully engages your attention so as to be able to transcend thought and thus the conditioned mind will work. This form of transcending the mind is well known to every creative artist or performer. You know, you do that when you really are into your art, your dance, your whatever. You just go beyond the mind. You're in the zone. That's what we're talking about, transcending the thought, the thinking process. So in meditation, however, transformation is the goal. And for that to be real, it must produce a lasting change in one's outer behavior and in one's outer self. So use the mantra. Use the names of God. Use your initiatory tone. Use what you've been given to transcend that mind, to operate from the witnessing presence just beyond your thoughts. And in that, you will find that you have moved beyond problems, issues, travails, and the worries of the world. They just won't show up. So the Atman, the divine self, is shining as immortal bliss, omnipresence, and all-knowing. It is the power that can transcend all things. And so, we send our blessings to each mind that is attuned to what we're sharing this evening. We send the light of the Supreme Mind, that is the mind of God, that is present in your mind when it is clear and devoid of attachment to falsehood. So let's go out chanting on IQ. Deep breath. Blessings and grace to one and all. Adonai.